Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
La-di-da, la-di-da.
He's looking at you, kid.
Let's put a smile on that face.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday at the Movies. Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Anne Hornaday, the film critic for the Washington Post, join me in Studio A. Netflix was booed at the Cannes Film Festival after dissing French theaters on a couple of its new films. We'll have a report on the ruckus at the Riviera. Plus, your calls and comments about the importance of seeing movies on the big screen. With so many home viewing options, how much does it matter to go to the movies? Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Noises Off at the Everyman Theater in Baltimore. Midday starts right after the news. And good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. It's the Midday Movie Mayhem. We've got Jed Dietz from the Maryland Film Festival. He is the founder and director. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you.
You have recovered from last month's festivities.
Oh, we're off and running. New theater.
Very good. And Anne Hornaday, our intrepid film critic for the Washington Post. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
And the author of a new book, Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. It's coming out in a couple of weeks. Anne has just returned from the Cannes Film Festival, which had its share of controversy this year. So we're going to report on that. I call it the Ruckus from the Riviera.
Oh, I love it.
It's like the Thriller from Manila, except it's the Ruckus from the Riviera. And Jed and his crew at the Maryland Film Festival have now been in operation in their new theater, The Parkway, for about a month, right? 3 weeks?
Not quite a month.
And we'll get an update on that. We'll talk about a few of the movies that will be at the Charles Theater, the Senator Theater, and, of course, The Parkway here in Baltimore in the coming days. We are Facebook living, streaming this video for the first 20 minutes or so of the program today. So you can go to WIPR.org and click on our Facebook link to see what's cooking here in Studio A. By the way, one of the controversies at Cannes has to do with requirements about Netflix movies having to be released theatrically in order to qualify for prizes, and also how long after theatrical releases those movies can be made available to stream, etc. So we're going to talk about the specifics of the argument in a minute, but we're interested in hearing from you folks who are listening out there in radio or computer land. How important is it for you to see a movie in a theater, as opposed to watching it on a TV or a computer or a tablet or even your telephone, your cell phone? I suppose it's not a telephone anymore because it's not hooked up to your wall. But, I mean, what does it matter to you, or does it matter to you, that you view the work of film artists on devices for which they were not putatively created? Join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. And, of course, you're always welcome to join us on Twitter at Midday Tom Hall. So, Jed, let's start with the Parkway. You had a great festival this year.
Yep.
I mean, it sounds like, attendance was good. And,
yep.
And reaction to the theater certainly has been very strong. We had a great time last month broadcasting this program from the Parkway. A lot of excitement. And so things are off to a good start.
Yeah, we're off to a terrific start, getting our feet underneath us. You know, we're bringing a whole new set of movie-going options to town. I mean, that's always been part of the mission. So we're feeling our way in of how to get the word out, and, you know, website and social media and advertising. And so we started with a bang, and it's been really wonderful. The first movie that we started with the Parkway was Female Trouble, John Waters' movie. So a retrospective screening. And we had a author of the book Female Trouble that's about to come out who was there. John popped in for an intro. Pat Moran did a Q&A afterwards.
She's the casting director who worked with John on all those movies.
Yeah, and has won.
And many other movies.
Yeah, and won three Emmys, you know, Veep and blah, blah, blah. So it was really fun. And the variety of movies that we've been showing has been great. And the energy in the place has been great. So
One of the things, I mean, the film festival, you know, heretofore certainly has events throughout the year.
Right.
I mean, but it's not every day.
Right.
I mean, you would have screenings and stuff. It's not just the festival itself, which happens in that first weekend in May. But one of the transitions and transformations for your organization, which is now 19 years old, going on its 20th anniversary next year, is you've now got a whole lot of problems you never had before, given that you're running, you know, a big building and you're selling tickets 365 days a year. I mean, that's a stress on a nonprofit organization to ramp up to the degree that you all have ramped up sort of all at once.
No question. I mean, hard to overstate what kind of a stress has been put on the organization. But, you know, we're growing. And I think, you know, the inflection point that we're in is you know, just the right one to be in. I mean, this building is the right building. I mean, Ziegler Sneed's design is magnificent, and, you know, audiences universally are loving it. It's a very exciting way to preserve history and honor all the movie history that's going on in this very rare building, 1915 movie theater. And this new programming, which is obviously, that's going to take some outreach work continuing, because these are movies that have never come to town, and therefore we've got to help the audience understand, you know, what now is available. But the organization has been phenomenal through all those 19 years, and this festival and the opening of this great building, you know, it's been it's sort of an amazing thing to be part of.
It's an exciting time. And one of the points we made when we were at the Parkway, Anne Hornaday, was also the importance of the theater that's just a couple blocks down the street, the Charles Theater, which Buzzy Cusack and his daughter Kathleen are running and doing a great service to the film-loving community.
Absolutely.
Here. I had a long conversation just this morning with Kathleen Cusack about the impact of the Parkway on their business. And one of the things that she pointed to was, first of all, she's very out front and candid about, you know, she's not in a feud with the Parkway or any of that kind of stuff. Obviously, it's competition, but anything's competition. There's other things you can do besides go to the movies.
That's right.
But she talks about the fact that there's industry data that suggests that movie theaters are kind of sui generis. They're a little bit unlike other kinds of things. So when it comes to what they call the cluster effect, you might want to have a bunch of restaurants together, or you might want to have, you know, a bunch of clothing stores together, or a bunch of other kinds of retail things. But movie theaters, like she pointed to the fact that most shopping centers, you know, shopping malls, only have one movie theater. They don't have three different ones, you know, that the cluster effect doesn't necessarily work for movie theaters. So I wonder, what's your experience with that? I mean, is the fact that the Parkway is just down the street from the Charles, does this rising tide lift all boats thing apply, or is it going to be important for both of these theaters to, you know, distinguish themselves either by their programming or other ways?
It's the programming. And I think the first, I understand, I think what, when there's theaters and there's theaters, I mean, I think if you're talking about garden variety multiplexes, that's true. Nobody needs yet another cookie cutter multiplex just around the corner from another cookie cutter multiplex. But when you're talking about independently owned theaters that are going to distinguish themselves in terms of the programming and just the experience of the theater, then I don't see a problem. And one comparison might be, in Silver Spring, they have the AFI Silver literally a block away from a Regal Majestic commercial theater. And those two coexist, I think, pretty happily.
Bethesda, far from a mainstream art house in Bethesda.
Exactly. And then right. You have the Bethesda Row, which is right around the corner from a Regal, another big Regal multiplex. Right. So I really do think it comes down to programming, careful programming, just knowing your audience and doing that outreach that Jed's talking about. I mean, that's just crucial in terms of educating people about what's there. And then I do think that the tide can lift all boats. And I actually think, I mean, I don't know if this has ever been part of your thinking, Jed, but I could see a scenario where if the Charles gets jammed and needs to move something off, but it's still doing some business, the Parkway could maybe pick that up and keep, you know, keep a movie in town a little bit longer for people to catch up with, and then give the Charles a little bit more breathing, you know. So I'm an optimist. I'm really hoping that this can work out.
But Jed, I think that's one of the concerns. If I could summarize the concerns that Kathleen and Buzzy Cusack have about the Charles, it's just that if the programming becomes duplicative, if you're doing the same kind of programming that the Charles is doing, that could be a difficult situation. If you're doing different kinds of films that are not in the, I guess you would call the Charles programming, kind of independent art films or something, would that be a good way of summarizing it? I mean, I don't know how you would summarize the ones at the Parkway, but it will. Are you convinced that you can sustain an economic model running this theater and running all of the ancillary things you got to pay for with films that are different in nature from the ones that are going to be down the street at the Charles?
Yeah, I mean, yes is the answer. And it will be additive. Their success will help us, of course, because they're bringing more moviegoers to the neighborhood, as we will also do. And that should cross-pollinate because of different kind of programming. But we are a not-for-profit. You know, our revenue streams are not limited to ticket sales and concessions. We have sponsorships. We've already had some really generous gifts to get the building built. And in that, there's a reserve fund to help us get off the ground. We're still raising money. It's what we do. You know, we're
all nonprofits do.
Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it gives us the bandwidth to program differently. We're half their size. You know, we're 600 seats total in the three screens. So it's a whole different business model. And the facts are, hundreds of movies don't come to Baltimore every year. And, you know, not all of them are going to be big hits. Not all of them are commercially viable, should not be at the Charles. But they probably should come to Baltimore to serve the student population or whatever. There are 1,800,000 people in a 30-minute drive circle from the corner of Charles and North, where the Parkway is. There is no other movie theater in that whole circle. There are many, many movie screens, most of them in the suburbs, but the Charles and Senator and Cine Bistro and Landmark. But none of them are programming what our mission is for the Parkway. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, can we bring some of those people, not maybe a huge number, but can we bring tens of thousands of those people in a couple times a year, and then they'll see maybe a more mainstream art house movie, a Woody Allen movie or something at the Charles, and want to come back. And for the first time, they've come to the neighborhood.
And Anne Hornaday, speaking of some of these other screens, the Cine Bistro, Jed was telling me yesterday that it's the strongest opening, the one that's over in the rotunda. Does it still call the rotunda?
Sure.
In Roland Park. They have a bunch of these scattered around the country. And the one here in Baltimore is the strongest opening of any Cine Bistro in the country, and they show studio movies and have a dining experience attached to it. You have to be 21 years old to get in there. I guess they sell booze or something. I haven't been in there yet, but you know, what does that tell you? That here in Baltimore, the response to this concept of going and having a dinner that's served to you by a wait staff and watching a mainstream movie, what does that bode?
Well, that proof of concept was really perfected and proven years ago by Tim League at the Alamo Draft House in Austin. And I happened to be working in Austin at the time that he opened the Alamo. And I will say, we were all very skeptical, you know, about this idea that you would interrupt a film-going experience. It just seemed so antithetical to the immersive, mesmerizing, you know, experience of going to see a movie, to have somebody slinging food in front of you. But Tim he's a film aficionado and a cinephile, and he never compromised the technical specs, and the presentation of the films was always pristine and perfect, and the way that they choreographed the wait staff and the way that you order is seamless and utterly, you know, it doesn't interrupt anything. And so I think that you know, the old saw about movie theaters is always that it wasn't a movie business, it's a popcorn business. I mean, that's where they earn their revenues,
where the profit is, right?
Exactly. It's
not so much in the
cut,
ticket
sales. The cut in the ticket sales is so marginal, you know. By the time they start, you know, a movie has to play for a very long time before a theater can actually make money on the movie. So they make their money on concessions, and so selling booze and beer and wine and high-end concessions is a really economically smart move, and people enjoy it's smart in terms of people's enjoyment and adding value. And so I think that's what Cinebristo is clearly capitalizing on. Like you, I mean, we've tried to get in and it's been so packed we weren't able to get in. Mm, I mean, so I can attest to the popularity.
We got
to
take a break, but before we do, let's grab one phone call. Erica in Baltimore, welcome to the Movie Mayhem with Jed Dietz and Ann Hornaday.
Hi. I just wanted to pose more of the question about cost. We are a family of three, two adults and a child, and we recently went out to the movies, and with tickets, popcorn, candy, soda, we spent probably about $75 versus staying at home and watching TV on our big screen, waiting for it to come on Amazon Prime or, you know, on demand or something. It seems like the movie experience is just not the same. And with a small child, I need pause and rewind.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Interesting.
So as much as I want to go, is Netflix, you know, more of where we are now? Like, it's just a change in time.
Interesting notion. And we'll talk a little bit more about this after the break, Jed. But before we go, I mean, so many attractions are facing the Baltimore Orioles, the Baltimore Ravens, the Baltimore Choral Arts Society, the Symphony, you know, even the museums when they have to charge admissions are wrestling with the barrier that the economics of these various businesses present. I mean, it's not easy. How are you approaching the pricing of the tickets at the Parkway, for example?
We're very aware of price points and what is welcome for people, both concessions and tickets. So I think that's a very important component. But I love these other forms of distribution, and I think it's really changing the industry and the availability of product. And I think as we opened the Parkway with these smaller independent films without advertising budgets and that kind of stuff, one of the things that's so exciting to me is I think Netflix and Amazon Prime and to some degree On Demand and iTunes have opened the doors in people's minds who go to movies. Most of America, 68% of America goes to a movie at least once a year in a movie theater. There's no art form even remotely like that. I mean, that's all other art forms combined. So if you can start to get people to think a little bit beyond the studio marketed movies, which are really the ball game in terms of marketing. And I think Netflix and Amazon Prime and On Demand are doing that. Yeah. I think it's great.
The way they connect with audiences is really awesome.
Well, we will talk more about that when we come back from a break with Jed Glass is Half Full Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Pollyanna Ann Hornaday, the film critic for The Washington Post. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to The Movie Mayhem. When we come back, you can join us 410-662-8780. Our email midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. Stick around.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to the Midday Movie Mayhem. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the Intergalactic Broadcast, it's the Midday News Wrap. We'll begin tomorrow with a conversation with Delegate Luke Klippinger about the paid sick leave bill that he sponsored in the last session of the Maryland Assembly. Governor Hogan vetoed that bill. We'll talk with Delegate Klippinger about the reasons for that and the chances that the Assembly will override that veto when they reconvene next year. Plus, we will recap the news with Tamara Keith from NPR, and that's coming up tomorrow on Midday. Coming up a little later today, theater critic Jay Wynn Russick stops by with her weekly theater review. Today we're going to talk about Noises Off, a British farce at the Everyman Theater here in Baltimore. If you've just joined us today, we're talking about what's in movie theaters these days with our movie mavens Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Ann Hornaday of the Washington Post. Interested to hear from you about how you feel about the experience of seeing movies. Does it matter to you that you need to see movies on a big screen in a theater, or are you content to watch them at home or on your computer or on your tablet or even on that teeny little phone? Give us a call and let us know. 410-662-8780, our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall, our email midday@wipr.org. Let's go to the phones. Ed in Middle River, welcome to the Movie Mayhem with Ann Hornaday and Jed Dietz.
Hi. So a comment and a question. My comment is I'm a lifelong fan of going to the movies, and I love seeing movies on the big screen. And when it first became obvious that watching at home was going to be challenging that, I said to myself, no way, I'm not going to do that. I love going to the movies. I like the crowd. I like the way my feet stick on the floor. I like the whole thing. But I have to say, over time, I have migrated to watching many more movies at home. I still go to the big screen, but not nearly as often. So that's the comment. And the question is whether your guests feel like the advent of these smaller screens in the movie theaters is in their best interest. Because I'll tell you, I hate those small screens in the movie theater. And if that's where it's playing, I say, oh, hell, I'll just stay home and, sorry for the language. I'll just stay home and watch the show on my big screen television.
Well, golly gosh darn to heck, Ed, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And that's, you know, Ed, you are not alone.
No,
there are a whole lot
all.
Of people, yeah. in Hornaday who feel the way Ed feels. I mean, because the
totally.
Screens in the movie theaters
right.
are getting smaller.
It's true.
And the screens in our living rooms are getting bigger.
Exactly. And that's where I think the value added comes in that Jed's doing at the Parkway, which is, in that case, I think you do need a filmmaker. You need to eventize that mm-hmm. occasion somehow, either by having a filmmaker present or some kind of discussion. I mean, there is value, I think, in being in a room and seeing something with other people and having that experience. I mean, one movie that I think proved that this past year was I Am Not Your Negro, the James Baldwin documentary,
no
which
question.
Was just such a, it was just such a powerful experience. And to have that with a group of people was just redoubled.
Get Out,
I mean, but that's a genre.
Experience.
Yeah. Exactly. So there are certain movies that demand to be seen with a group.
I mean, Get Out's a horror movie, so there's people gasping. But there's
exactly.
also a comedy. People are laughing.
Yep.
And you laugh differently in a crowd
Absolutely.
Than you do in your living room.
Right.
No
so
question.
So then that size of the screen becomes worth it. But I do take Ed's point. I mean, I'm not a fan of those little tiny screens either. So I think, you know, you just have to kind of understand what you're doing this for. Like, are you you need to be very conscious about your choices. And it sounds like Ed very much is. And I'd be interested to know, like, what was it? Is it the, I mean, like you said, Tom, our home screens are getting bigger and the production values are getting higher for the home viewing experience, while, frankly, the theatrical experience, I think, has diminished in terms of just comportment, people talking, people texting. I'm not a fan of the sticky floors. Sometimes it can be. I mean, and I think the theaters, I mean, we see, like, the White Marsh now renovating with those big reclining seats. I mean, they're trying to respond in kind.
Yeah.
And make it a more pleasant experience. And to the economic issue, I totally agree that 75, you know, that's a lot of money for a young family. It's still relatively economical in terms of a family entertainment choice when you
yep.
compare it to all those other options. But
yeah,
I mean,
try going to Six Flags or something.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
Right.
So I mean, that's what our friends at the MPAA would
mm-hmm.
counter.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's all. It's just we have a lot of things conditioning our choices.
Dave from Frederick, welcome to the show. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, I love the big screen, and I won't probably ever give it up. I'm wondering if it's going to have impact on the economy related to movies. I mean, I'm in Frederick, and I go to the movie, and it's $13, $14. Well, I drive to Pennsylvania on Tuesday. It's a $5 show. It's the same movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little further driving. But, and I don't agree, Ann. I think, you know, you can't compare those other things with movies. My gosh, there's just two different, but a movie, $75 for a family plus popcorn and everything, a lot of money for a 2-hour movie.
Yes, that's a good.
So I don't see how poor families are going to. People who don't have money can't access that.
Yeah,
right.
That's a good point, Dave. I mean, Jed, just overall in the industry, is the availability of these movies so quick or so in such close proximity to their theatrical release, sometimes the same day on Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, iTunes, is that going to drive down the prices of tickets in the theaters, either chains or independents?
It's actually gone the other way so far, where the distributors and exhibitors are trying to figure out ways to get you to pay more for 3D glasses or a better seat or the money going to movie theaters has actually been pretty steady going up from the 60s on, but a lot of that's pricing, so we'll see. But I think the movie going experience is always better in a movie theater with a group if all the conditions are right. And some
right.
movie theaters are better run than others. But.
Yeah, so let's talk about the conditions at
yeah.
the Cannes Film Festival,
yeah.
which you've
yes.
attended, as you do every year. couple of things going on. First of all, you and others wrote about the fact that the movies weren't all that good.
No.
So that stinks. But also, there was this conflict or this controversy that arose right at the beginning of the festival having to do with Netflix and their legal requirements of theatrical release in France versus in the United States. I guess there's a French law that says that a movie has to be in theaters for 3 years before it can be on Netflix in France.
Yeah.
And Netflix is inclined to put it in the movie theater maybe for just a short period of time and then get it, you know, streaming. And then you have Pedro Almodovar, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
Who's this year's jury president, who just didn't like the idea of a Netflix movie. And there were two of them that were up for awards. I mean, it's the auteurs against the business people. I mean, there's all sorts of camps coming up here.
It was, the auteurs who, by the way, Almodovar, who later, before the festival ended, announced he was doing a project with Netflix.
Right.
Let us take note.
Yeah.
So he's on board now.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that was fun. So, yeah, I mean, I think, and the Netflix logo, like you said, there were two movies, Okja and The Meyerowitz Stories, a wonderful movie by Noah Baumbach with Dustin Hoffman and Ben Stiller and Adam Sandler. Both Netflix movies, both booed, the logo booed roundly when it screened for the press, you know, with these pure auteurists. But frankly, these are movies. I mean, they're not small screen movie. They're big screen movies. Cannes, I think, was caught a little flat-footed by the outcry from the French theater owners. They should have anticipated that. And now they have a rule that if they're going to be programming things from Netflix, that Netflix will commit to opening those movies in French theaters. So we'll see how far that goes. Of course, last year, Amazon was a huge presence at Cannes with 5 movies. But Amazon has really proactively said, we are dedicated to the theatrical experience.
Yeah, like Manchester by the Sea was an Amazon movie.
Exactly.
It was in
Loving
theaters
friendship.
Forever.
Exactly.
And then, now, it's you can stream
it
on Amazon.
So they have a slightly different business model in terms of the forcefulness of that, you know, forcing that window. They're not apt to do that. But listen, I mean, you know, the way I see it, like the way Jed does, is which is that these entities are, number one, they're supporting filmmakers. I mean, they're funding filmmakers. There's a wonderful movie that debuted at Sundance called I Don't Feel at Home in this World Anymore with Melanie Lynskey. Written and directed by Macon Blair, who he could not have gotten that movie done without Netflix. They gave him full freedom. It premiered at Sundance, went straight to Netflix. The way that Netflix and Amazon do their algorithms with connecting people, like if you like this, then you'll like that, these movies are able to find their audience. And so I can't argue with any of that. I mean, and then maybe one day, again, the Parkway is the perfect venue for if Macon is in town and wants to do a special screening of that film with Melanie or somebody else from the movie, then there's a theatrical, it doesn't militate against a theatrical experience. It just may not be a week-long theatrical run. It might be an evening.
And I think there's a lot of exploration going on. Amazon and Netflix are most directly in competition because they're trying to really have unique content. And that's been the buzzword. And I think they're both exploring how to use theatrical in a way that would help market their unique content. And they're both trying things. And I think, I can see them using theatrical releases concurrent with Netflix or Amazon Prime or a little before or using festivals and theatrical. They're just figuring this out. These guys are new.
Yeah, they're figuring it out. They're all figuring it out. But a couple of other things, Jed, that came out of the festival, and Anne wrote about this in the Post. There was she described it as a muted mood in Cannes. People didn't think the movies were very good. Plus, you also have another issue of one of the jurors, Jessica Chastain, an actress who's been in lots of great movies, complaining about the paucity of roles for women and women-centered storylines, etc. I mean, that's an argument that's been going on in Hollywood and elsewhere for a long time. It looks like the movie makers are not addressing it. What do you make of that?
I think that's a totally fair comment. Statistically, it's inarguable when you're talking about studio movies. I think that applies much less in the independent world. And it is interesting that I think she's absolutely right about just statistically looking at what was in Cannes this year. But the big winner, Sofia Coppola's Beguiled, you know, an adaptation of a story.
It's a Civil War movie.
Yeah, right? Adapted and written and directed by a woman director, all about women. There's a male character, but largely female cast. But it's what's unusual about it is that a jury member, I think quite appropriately and using the power of the jury, spoke out on this issue. And I think diversity in film is in all art forms, but especially in film, a very powerful art form, I think is issue that we should never stop talking about.
Well, and if I may, I mean, when the festival program was announced, the program director, artistic director Thierry Frémaux, was asked about this. Why so few women? And he kind of dismissed it and said, you know, this is a question I despise. Very dismissive, very haughty. He doesn't want to deal with it. Well, meanwhile, women like Sofia Coppola, like Lynn Ramsey, like Agnes Varda, like Jane Campion, were the story out of this festival.
Right.
I mean, they delivered some of the finest work at this festival.
How about racial diversity?
Not as good, but let me continue. Then we come home to Wonder Woman, which is opening tomorrow.
I want to talk about that.
And
anyway,
might save the summer, because right now the summer box office is not so hot. Pirates of the Caribbean, Baywatch, the usual, you know, all, this heroic male auteur that Cannes is so addicted to and will take mediocre work from just because they're the guys, because it's Michael Haneke or, you know, Bong Joon-ho or it might be Wonder Woman and Atomic Blonde and a lot of other female-centric movies that are coming out this summer that actually save the day.
Like literally
so
save the day, not
literally
only, you know,
on
fictionally.
And off the screen. Yeah. So for him to say this is a question I despise, you know, that it, you
yeah,
know, your life,
on.
Yeah, the art form and the industry might depend on that answer.
Mm-hmm. Let me just have you respond to the question of racial diversity at Cannes, because we had the Oscars So White a couple of years
ago. That's very true.
You know, so that's still going on at Cannes.
Yeah, I mean, as Will Smith said after Jessica Chastain made her comment, you know, Will Smith, who was a fellow juror, said, you know, and a few more people of color wouldn't hurt either. And,
yeah.
And I think that's absolutely on point. You know, I mean, it's an international festival. We're getting lots of different cultures there, mm-hmm. Which is always really invigorating to see. But the representation of American films is still roundly white and male.
Let's talk a little bit about Wonder Woman. I really can't wait to see this movie. I'm excited about this. So we got a clip here. This is a one of the more comedic scenes from the movie. So there's this heroine named Diana. She's played by Gal Gadot, who's the former Miss Israel. And she's having trouble adjusting to the customs and technology of early 20th century London. So she's evidently decked out in full, like, Edwardian dress, and she's got her sword and battle shield, and she's having trouble getting through the revolving door at the hotel, right? But she gets some help from the leading man. The character's name is Steve Trevor. He's played by Chris Pine, and a secretary played by Lucy Davis.
Yep, that's not gonna work. Please put the sword down, Diana. Diana.
Let me try it by myself.
Etta.
Why don't I meet you back at the office, and meanwhile I'll take this for safekeeping?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
You gotta put the sword down, Diana, please.
It doesn't go with the outfit.
At all. Put the sword down, first of all.
Promise me you will protect it with your life.
Yes. No.
You can trust her. Just hand that over.
Shield.
Just hand the shield to
there
her.
There we go. Whoa.
You got it. Thanks, Etta.
This is easy.
Delightful.
This fun fact about Handel's Messiah. At the first performance of Handel's Messiah in Dublin, Ireland in 1741 or 2, I can't remember, the newspaper article said, men are asked to come without swords and women without hoops so that they could fit lots of people on the benches because it was such a big smash, right?
Cool.
So I don't know about you, but the swords that I have in my closet, I have no outfits to wear with them.
No, it's a terrible problem.
They just don't match. So she's got a problem I think we can all identify with.
Totes, yeah. Goats.
Yeah. But it's a good movie.
It is a good movie. This was really, it's a fun movie. It's sort of, you know, as we were all piling on Batman v Superman last summer and Suicide Squad, those were such dreary, muddled, to my mind, sort of turgid slogs. And this one really brims with a lot of energy. a lot of visual energy. It's beautiful to look at. I mean, the director, Patty Jenkins, has really paid a lot of attention to the look of the film, the production design, the textures, the colors. It's just fun to watch. And Gal Gadot is a wonderful leading lady. I mean, she has a lot of, you know, they say about acting, you know, one of the secrets to great acting is holding something back and withholding and cultivating mystery and enigma. And she does all of that. She's gorgeous, but she's a readable text. I mean, she's just a very deep presence on screen. And Chris Pine, who you just heard there, who's her romantic foil, is utterly delightful and funny and self-deprecating. And it just has a tonal lightness to it that the other DC movies have lacked so far that I think is really encouraging. And it's just incredibly well, skillfully executed. It's just a lot of fun.
I mean, we have had women directors win Oscars, you know, over the last few years. Maybe Jed Dietz, we're making some incremental progress when it comes to gender equality in the movie business.
Yeah, incremental maybe. I think in general, the art form is incredibly vigorous, but I do think you tend to have to get below the studio finance movies so far to see real diversity. And then you see a lot of it.
I mean, we've got DuVernay. What is her first
name?
Ava DuVernay. Yeah. We've got the woman who, Catherine Bigelow. Catherine Bigelow did Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
So there is some progress, but it's an interesting thing. And maybe, you know, if Wonder Woman, wouldn't that be ironic if Wonder Woman saves the movie business?
It wouldn't surprise me in the least.
I want to talk about another movie that's at the Charles Theater. It opens tomorrow night. This is Paris Can Wait. This is Eleanor Coppola. Mm-hmm. What's her relationship to Sofia Coppola and Francis Ford?
She's Sophia's mother and Francis Ford's wife.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving.
And this is her, she's making her narrative feature debut at age 80, I think, 81.
Thanksgiving dinner at their house must
Could
be
Could you
fun.
Imagine?
Can you imagine that?
Oh,
you know, oh
boy.
My
Just the
agent
wine
says
alone.
This agent.
Oh, my goodness.
So Diane Lane, Alec Baldwin, what's this about?
This is about a woman who's married to a movie guy, and they're at Cannes. And they are going to be going to Paris for a vacation, but she can't fly. So she ends up, an associate of her husband's, ends up driving her to Paris. And he takes her on this kind of winding Epicurean road trip where they stop for lunch and they eat and they flirt and he shows her art. And, you know, it's light, it's feather light. I can't defend it on serious artistic grounds, but I also can't deny that I got so much pleasure from watching Diane Lane drive through France. I mean, she's another one of those great screen objects. Mm-hmm. I just think she's magnificent. And I'm sorry that I can't remember the name of the French actor who plays opposite her, but he's quite charming. Like I said, don't go in expecting, you know, deep musings on man's inhumanity to man. But it's sort of a little piece of adult escapism that
with the word Paris in it, I'm in.
In Diane Lane and food goodness.
Jed, before we go, we got about a minute left. We want to talk about Slack Bay, which is opening tonight at the Parkway. This is Juliette Binoche. Bruno Dumont is the director. What's that about?
So it's
a new movie, right?
It's a new movie. It's actually been running. We're extending it a week because it and the Commune have done so well. Slack Bay stars Juliette Binoche, as you mentioned. So it's Dumont works in this sort of dark comedy. And this is on a beach, lovely part of France, with cannibals.
On a beach in France with cannibals.
Right.
It sounds like it sounds like a bad game of Clue. Colonel Mustard in the dining room with the candlestick.
Yes.
All right. Well, we will have to call it a day there. Break a leg with the Parkway you find your legs, you know, your sea legs on that. And Anne Hornaday, we look forward to talking to you next time about your new book, How to Watch Movies. Thank you so much.
Thank
we will see you then. Jed Dietz and Anne Hornaday. Anne's new book is out next week. It's called Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. And as I said, we'll talk about it next month here on the next edition of the Midday Movie Mayhem. That's the first Thursday in July. Coming up after a quick break, we will talk with theater critic J. Wynn Russick about the new show at the Everyman Theater, Noises Off. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.